Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
Hello, Mitchy.
Hello, Mills.
How are you?
I'm really well. How
That's
are you?
That's good. I sounded really Aussie then, didn't I?
And so did I. For an Irish person, I was like, g'day, mate.
G'day, mate.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm really excited about today because today we have a very different format with our podcast, and this is the first time we're doing this.
Yes.
We're going to showcase over the course of our upcoming podcast, we're going to showcase some of our clients and people we've worked really, really closely with and just tell some of their stories.
Yep.
And the reason I suppose we wanted to do this is because for us it's important that people get that there's that real transformation is possible. It's not just something that we just talk about, you know, when we get here and we're just spouting out words, you know.
And actual outcomes, you know. And I think people are also just sick of listening to ourselves.
To us?
Yeah, to
Why
each other.
Why would they be sick of listening
No, I said we were sick of listening to ourselves.
I was
going to say. We were over ourselves.
It's just
so
me
we
and
want,
you.
Let's get someone, let's make it a threesome.
Let's make it a threesome.
Let's make it interesting.
But what I'm really, really glad about is that this next person and our first is our first person that's ever going to come on and do this with us. Because I am super inspired by her story. I get brought to tears every time she speaks to me about the transformation and some of what's happened to her.
Yeah.
So, Amelia Gow, welcome. Hello.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me, guys.
Oh, thanks so much for being here. I'm looking forward to this today.
Yes.
But now, I know there's something that you might not want to do, but you know how we start our podcast, Amelia. We start our by the way, you've got a great name. It's not spelt right, but it's a great name. you know how we start our podcast. We always start with Mitch singing a little song, and we're going to hand that over to you today. We're going to ask you to choose your song, and you can hum a few verses, a few bars of your song, not whole verses.
Yeah, please. No, we've only got a certain amount of time. We don't need to.
What's your favourite song?
What's your favourite song at the moment, buddy?
It's a song called Fate Don't Know You, and it's by Desi Valentine.
Oh, cool. Well, sing or hum.
He has this amazing Southern American voice, and you really want me to do this, but
give it your best shot, buddy.
I've turned the tides, I've broken the rules, and it doesn't matter what happens because fate don't know you like I do.
Oh, I like
very
it.
Good.
So, and is it a country song? Is it kind of country?
No, it's like a southern sort of bluesy. It's really bluesy. It's a beautiful, beautiful song. It's about two people that have fallen in love, and I just really like it. It makes me cry.
Oh wow.
Well, I'm going to have to go listen to that. Thank you for doing that. Okay, so let's talk about, I suppose the reason we wanted to chat with you, Amelia, is because you've got a pretty massive story. It's a great way to start this new segment. And I suppose, shall we start by just getting a little bit of the background and a little bit of your history, your story? I think that's probably the best way to start, hey?
Sure.
So tell us,
how far back do you want to go?
Yeah, where does it all begin?
Where does it all begin?
Well, you know, I was born and then it went uphill and then downhill and then uphill again.
So let's start with the I was uphill and then it went downhill and then it went uphill. So how did that roll?
When I was, you know, obviously I've done a lot of work on this, but when I was a teenager, I started telling myself really bad stories. And in that sense, I acted out because I felt, you know, I didn't feel good enough and I didn't feel heard and I felt all this awful stuff. And so I started acting out. So I found drugs, which are amazing, and, you know, entered the rave scene at a very young age.
How old were you?
I was 14 when I properly started using drugs.
Right.
Right.
It's pretty young age to get involved, eh?
Pretty young. And my mum did, you know, she was very, you know, very smart in the way that she dealt with me. She gave me a rule, and if I broke it, then I was out of the house. Well, I broke it. So I was drugs and then out of the house on the streets and just trying to find my way through life at a young age doing that was just not great. And it got me into some really, really awful situations, and I hurt a lot of people, including myself. And you know, it was a 10-year battle of just crap. If you could tick off all the things you don't want your teenage daughter to do, I did them all and excelled at them.
Tell me what started that off, Amelia. Like, what do you think started that cycle for you at such a young age?
Well, thanks to some work I've done with some amazing people over the last sort of 8 years, it really was my mum was a workaholic. You know, she provided by working. And so I was missing that sort of maternal connection. I also didn't have a stable father in my life, I guess. So there was a lot of, I just felt I could never live up to her. I always felt that I wasn't going to be good enough. And I do remember it started with a maths test, like something really simple. You know, I failed a fractions test and I remember mum yelling at me for it. And that was the minute that I just tanked everything. Wow. You know, I got kicked out of school within a week and just went for it.
Right.
Wow.
Right. And were you 14 then?
I was about 13, 12 to 13. And right. I just started. That's the start of the process.
Right.
Wow.
All right.
And was that difficult for your mum, do you think?
I couldn't imagine how she survived. She's a very strong woman and, you know, she was, I think just seeing me go down the rabbit hole and not knowing how to help me would have just torn her apart.
Right,
but,
right.
You know, she had her boundaries and it was play by them or don't. And, you know, I really respect her for doing that now.
Because, I mean, sometimes that's difficult for parents, you know, to be able to draw such a hard line, you know, and practice tough love that says, if you do this, this is the line. And you know, I think, you know, when parents succumb to their own line, that can be just as problematic as opposed to a mum that goes, look, I'm in this for the long haul because I love you, you're my daughter, and this is the line. I think that when they do that, it is hard love, and it is their way of you know, letting you know that I love you enough to have a line.
Yeah, I think that it was the best thing for me. I think that it taught me that I am responsible for my decisions.
Right.
And, you know, I think that we are responsible for the actions we take. Yes, I was a kid. Maybe there was a different way around it, but it is what it is. And I think that if she kept, you know, pandering to me and enabling me, I would not have,
right.
I would probably still be down a hole.
Right, 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 right. That's a really important point, especially to some of the parents out there who have teenagers, you know, that's an important point. You know, it's about letting the child know that you care enough to say, no, that's not okay, because it's very easy to enable the child by keeping pandering to your requirements.
Yeah.
So so go on. So tell us what happened. So you reckon about 10 years of that, Amelia?
Yeah, it was 10 years. So 14 and then 24, just before my 24th birthday, was the time of school of life, as I call it. I did everything. I had teenage pregnancy. I was in and out of rehabs. I was, you know, just associating with some really bad people. And, you know, things kept happening. And, you know, I say the universe kept trying to wake me up and go, if you don't do something about this, this is going to get worse. And it just progressively got worse. And, you know, there was a few times that I overdosed and I didn't think I was even going to be here. And then at 23, I had what I call my Mack truck moment, and the universe literally kicked me in the head. And someone I knew who was also a drug addict seriously assaulted me. And, you know, what the police called tortured me for, you know, over a week and held me hostage. And, you know, the day that I walked out of there, I got myself out of there, the words I said to myself was, good one, Amelia, you've done this to yourself. Mm-hmm. And that was the minute that I knew, and the second that I knew that this was all on me. Mm-hmm. I don't thank him for what he did, but I got myself there. So I had a choice at that very moment in life to play the victim or to, you know, play the person that's going to take accountability for this.
So you're held captive for 7 days, and you're being assaulted. So how did you get out of there? What how did you get out?
My best quality in life is manipulation. I knew that he loved, you know, like he had his kids taken off him when he was young. So children, he would never hurt children. So my little sister at that time was only 7. And I kept telling him that she was coming to see me because I think it was, you know, like an Easter holiday or a break time. Mm-hmm. And I said that she's coming to find me and you don't want her to see me like this and it's not fair that we do this to her and all that sort of stuff. So right. It was 2 days of, you know, trying to put that sort of process in his head that I didn't want my sister to go through this trauma and, you know, that she was going to come and get me and see where we are. So at 7 days he stopped hurting me and he let me recover for 2 days to try and look normal. But, yeah, it was all a lie. My sister had no idea I was going through that.
So
it works.
So I'm curious to figure out what it was that made you think, you know, good one, Amelia, like that you didn't put the blame on him by the sounds of it. You realized what was going through your mind at that time?
The decisions that I had made led to that moment. The simple fact is that if I wasn't taking drugs and if I wasn't on the streets and if I, you know, followed the rules, I would be safe at home. Right. You know, it doesn't matter what kind, you know, you might be a very good person, but when you're playing in that space, you're associating with other people that play in that space.
Right.
And mm-hmm. unfortunately, it's a very dangerous place to be in sometimes.
Yeah.
And like I said, I do everything to the best of my ability. So when I went downhill hard.
Right. You did it all out. You gave it 100%, yeah. Hey, Amelia. Okay, so then what happened? So how did you deal with it after that?
I very disconnected emotionally. So that I think that's just a process that happens when you're a teenager going through all this sort of stuff. So I remember being very shut down and being like, oh, I didn't want to tell anyone. I didn't even tell my mother. I think she only sort of knows a bit of it even in just the last year. She doesn't really know. I felt that I didn't want to bring that onto my family, that they had dealt with enough. Mm, nice. But I went to go and see my sister and because, you know, she was my little safe haven with her mum and, you know, her mum and got me to the police and we sat down talking to the police and, you know, they were going through it all and I just said, like, I don't want to be this person. Like, that happened to me and it is awful, but I don't want to sit there and play a victim. I don't want this to hold me back. I've held myself back for 10 years. I've got to learn from this and I've got to find the answers as to why I got myself in this situation, not just sit there and go, I was assaulted and poor me. Like, I have to deal with it. I've got to fix it and I've got to move on with my life.
Mm. Right.
So you were on, so that started your search, yeah?
That started my search. It was, trying to do everything and learn from everything and just be a little bit more aware of who I am and what I do and making some decisions then for me and try to reconnect with myself because I didn't know who I was.
You tell a story about when you ended up in a group of of women.
Yeah.
And who were in a crisis situation. And, you know, this is important to come. This is important to come from a woman, especially to women that perceive or have gone through something similar. Can you tell a little bit about that story about and what got you out of that room?
So they put me in a women's survivors group, I guess. And it was, you know, I walked into this room and the big neon lights were on and, you know, everyone was sitting in a circle on those cold metal chairs. And I remember sitting there and what they were doing was going around and getting everyone to relive what happened. They were talking about their trauma and talking about what happened to them and the person that hurt them and all this sort of stuff. And I just said, like, you know, when they asked me to talk about it, like, I didn't want to. I felt that, one, my story might have been, you know, I didn't want to put anyone else out with my story. And two, I just thought that reliving it and talking about it, it created that fear in me that I had when I was locked in that apartment.
Yeah.
I just couldn't see any way that constantly rehashing it and going over the exact details of it was going to get you out of those feelings and that fear. So, you know, I attended one session and said, no more. Like, I'm not a victim. I'm not a survivor. I'm me, and I've just been through this, and I don't want to keep playing in that space.
Yeah. It's kind of like, it sounds like you didn't want to get familiar or any more used to feeling those feelings, so that you got, like, you know, tempered to them, that they became normal for you to continuously feel that stuff, which tends to be what happens in those scenarios and those situations, which I've been in many, many, many of them. And yeah, to be able to have that insight to at such a young age is really quite astounding, you know, because so many men and women and young, and it doesn't mean that they don't hold their place, but it means that you have to think greater than the emotion that you're feeling, and otherwise you will become tempered to it, and then it becomes the norm.
Yeah. And, you know, I talk to a lot of people today that do the same thing. They're still living in that trauma, and they're still living in that space, and they can't move. And it's, you know, some of it's 10, 20 years later, and they're still stuck because all they ever do is just focus on that moment that, you know, and they don't, what I call, balance it out. They don't see the other side of it, and they just can't move on. And I just did not want to be that person.
So it all came down to a choice, by the sounds of it, just a choice in that moment to not continue to repeat that cycle. Is that correct? Like,
yes.
you had to make a choice then.
It was, you can put all the effort and energy into getting yourself into that problem, or you can put it into getting yourself out of it. So I couldn't go any deeper. If I decided to stay back in that space, I would have died.
Do you think the reason you see that? I mean, when it seems that when people continue in that trauma, what tends to happen then? What tends to happen then is that the perpetrator is still doing it.
Yeah, they still have the power. You're still giving them all the strength because they're still tormenting you and hurting you 10 years later. Mm. And, you know,
and they're not even in the room.
Still winning.
Yeah.
That's cool. Like, it's really, it's to me, like, we talk a lot about this stuff, right, Mitch? Like, in what we do, we talk a lot about it. But you made that choice prior to meeting us that you didn't want to live like that. You know, we tell people all the time that you don't have to be a victim of what's happened to you.
Yeah.
What's happened to you is what's happened to you. Yeah. And it does, we're not saying it's right or wrong. We're just saying you can choose to make it the worst thing that's ever happened to you and become a victim of it, or you can choose to transcend it and stand on the shoulders of it in some way and use it as your stepping stone to having a different experience of life. I think, though, that what's based on what you're saying, you've made that choice, but were you able to actually, were you able to make that transition on your own? Like, what happened?
No, not a chance. I still was really lost. You know, I was still hiding a lot from it and still running away from it, I guess. And I guess that's what I did. I actually physically ran, you know, across the country to get away from it. But I did, you know, I was more aware then of, you know, making sure I surround myself with the right people and then trying to find the opportunities of maybe understanding it a little bit more. You know, it didn't just happen and I flicked on a switch and went, I'm going to do something great about this. It was just at that point the realization that that was my decision, and my decision now is to do the right thing for me and honor myself properly by living a better life.
Right.
So it took a few more years after that before I really cleared it and, you know, turned it into what I have turned it into now.
So you spent basically you're saying that you, based on that choice, you made different decisions with your life and you shifted the behaviours. So you started hanging around with different people. You started not going into the same scenarios that you were in before. Is that, and therefore taking those opportunities when they arose?
Yep, it was an instant rehab. I don't, you know, stop using drugs. I stopped associating with anybody that was like that. And, you know, I just made those decisions then that I have to live what I tried to call a normal life, mm-hmm. like what, you know, your textbook, what normal looks like. I had to try and get to that point.
Yeah. So do you think, I mean, I think this is a, you know, a good example of, you know, when we want to master destiny, we can only do so as long as we're willing not to be a victim of our history. And I think that this is a great example of how that comes about. So do you want to tell us what happened next then? How did you end up doing what you're doing now?
So I, you know, I started living a little bit more authentically, and a few years went by and I really repaired the relationship with my family and my friends and my mother and all that sort of stuff. Then through one of my employers, I met you guys, and, you know, the work that I did with you guys really, you know, because it was just, it just made sense to me. I'm very factual. I'm very figure, you know, I'm all that sort of stuff. I've done other counseling and coaching and all this sort of stuff, and nothing really, you know, made sense to me. So I met you guys, and I helped to repair some of the problems with my family, which was really important to me. And then I started learning that being congruent and being honest and being, you know, vulnerable is probably the next step that I needed to get into my life, you know, because I still was not admitting what I went through. I still hid it. I still never said, you know, hi, I'm Amelia and I'm a drug addict. Like, I would just never, ever do that. It took me about 5 years to get to the point where I realized that, hold on, we got to admit all of it. We've got to sit right there and go, I am all of those things,
right,
for us to get there. So during all that course and reconnecting with my family, my mum, who, you know, is a sensational human being, just showed me what unconditional love was and just dropped the past. You know, there came a point where she just looked at me and was like she's never brought it up. She would never go back there. She would never make me feel that way. And, you know, when I started living for me, she then started supporting me and going, right, what do we need to do to make you better, or, you know, to give you the life that you want to live? And she had a training company in Melbourne and said to me one day, why don't you open an office in Queensland and make it anything that you want it to be? And I was like, whoa, that was pretty big. So we changed it a little bit and adapted it. And we have now an academy and a course where we take on people that are going through anything, you know, people with disabilities, people with trauma. I work a lot with DV, and I help, you know, deal with some of that stuff and get them to a place where they can get a job. Because I think that when you have somewhere to go each day, if we can deal with the stuff a little bit, you know, enough just to get a job, and you've got some income and you have a sense of purpose and you have that community around you, then we can start healing all the rest of it. So, you know, today we help thousands of people back into work and making choices about their life and making goals and, you know, doing things that they never thought was possible. And it's only because I could stand up and say, hi, I'm Amelia and I'm a drug addict.
Right.
And that's why we're so successful.
Right, right, right. Can you tell us the story of any one particular person? And I know you've helped.
You might not be able to use their names.
Yeah, you might not. But if you can tell us one situation.
Yeah, I mean, I've got there's a young woman that we had here, and we're at a point now where the business is so large that I don't necessarily get to deal with a lot of our students one-on-one anymore. But one day one of my mentors put their head in my office and said, I need you now. And I was like, okay, that means it's serious. And I walked into one of the meeting rooms, and there was this young girl sitting there, and she just reminded me of myself. She was shaking and crying, and, you know, she was broken. She was neck to knee in thousands of little scars from self-harming. She just, you know, she was on suicide watch. I didn't think that she would make it another day. And it turned out that she was sexually assaulted as a child by a family member, and she also had a father that was an abusive drunk. So she was being attacked on both ends. Right. And then 16, she decided to run away and get away from it. So she moved to the Gold Coast and dealt with the trauma with drugs and self-harming. And, you know, I just saw her. She just said, I've tried to commit suicide 4 times and, like, I'm done now, I'm out. And it took me half an hour. And in half an hour I had this girl who was not wanting to be here to smiling and seeing how incredibly strong she is and how powerful she is and how what she went through has actually given her everything that she needs to get on with it and live a really good life. And it literally was 20 minutes and half an hour. We've completely transformed this woman's life. And now she's working, she wants to be a patisserie chef so she can eventually come back and work for me and help people. And she's at one of the top bakeries becoming a patisserie chef, and she's smiling, and she's, you know, just bought a car, and, wow, you know, she's just an amazing human being. And it took, you know, we saved a life in less than half an hour.
Wow.
And I just go, like, if we can do that every half an hour, we're going to be all right.
Yeah.
That's magic. That's magic. Can I ask you, after that choice point of you saying, no, I'm not going to be a victim of this anymore, what would you say was the most pivotal realization that you had?
One pivotal one? I've had a few. Well,
tell us a couple.
I guess the biggest thing is being honest about it all. Mm. You know, when we hide these things from ourselves and from the people that love us, it still, once again, giving it power and giving it its space. The minute that we could sit down and, you know, talk about it freely, you know, when I talk about my story, I don't cry or get emotional because of what happened to me. I get emotional of the transformation that happened. So for me, it's about being honest about where we were and that it's okay. Like, we've all got shit. I don't know if I'm allowed to swear, but we've all got stuff going on. We've all had moments of weakness. We've all been traumatized somehow. We've all gone through all of this stuff. And the minute that we can sit there and go, and is the time that you're willing to then make a change, because it's got no power anymore. It happened. You can't do anything about it. You cannot change the past, but you can change how you decide to live with that.
I think stories like that, you know, I remember meeting you that first event that you sat at. And I remember speaking to you that day. I won't go into detail about some of what we spoke about, but I, for me, people like you, Amelia, are my heroes, because you go through these things and then you just don't let it define you. You don't let it be all of who you are. And there was the potential for you to do that, and you would have been, I suppose, excused in some way because shit happened. But the fact that you were able to turn that around and you were able to look at what was really going on and really take stock of your situation and become your authentic self. And, you know, and we witnessed that over the years, and it took, you know, there was times where we didn't see you for a while and then we saw you again, and then we didn't see you for a while and we saw you again. But the transformation over the years has just been
astounding,
phenomenal. So I just take my hat off to you for making that commitment to yourself. Even, you know, I think sometimes people think, I don't know how I can not be a victim of this.
Yeah.
But just not knowing how doesn't mean we don't give it a go, because the fact that you give it a go leads you in the direction of what it's going to take at that end point. And I think that sometimes we want that end destination and we want to know how we're going to get to that end destination, instead of just making that commitment to ourselves to say, this is the path I want to take. I don't know how I'm going to get there, but I'm committed to this path.
The other thing that's crazy is, you know, we talk about, because people, it's funny, Amelia, people spend a lifetime in trauma. you know, like a lifetime. And trauma has become such a normalized word. And the fact that, you know, you ended up in that group and realized that you didn't want to be there, you didn't want to do this to Amelia because she'd had enough. But also, the, you know, when you speak about going in and sitting with that girl and within 20 minutes to half an hour, it's crazy how the right quality questions at the right time in 20 minutes, as opposed to a lifetime, the right quality questions at the right time from the right person can turn a person's trauma into their greatest achievement, into, you know, empowering them and enabling them and making them step up so that they can actually go on and achieve anything that they want within their lives.
Yeah. I think that's the, I think the big thing. You guys taught me that, teach everyone, you put the same amount of energy into these things. Why don't you do the work to put the energy into the right side of it? And if you're at that point where you've got to make this decision and someone talks to you properly, then that's the moment that you change someone's life and go, and I'll work with you and I'll help you through it, but you have to be ready to make that decision because you're worth it. And most people, you know, they've never even been told that they're worthy.
Where's that led you in your life now, Amelia? Where are you at now?
And what's happening in the future?
What's just happened? You had a big big win there.
I did. We just won Young Entrepreneur of the Year in Social Entrepreneurship for the Southeast Queensland region, and which means that in November we get to go up for the National Young Entrepreneur of the Year. It was such a huge lesson in my life, and once again another pivotal moment that really made me look at things a little bit more. It was very amazing. It was very overwhelming, but it was also a time for me to realize, you know, I was still saying not negative words, but I still wasn't honoring myself. And it was actually you guys, when I spoke to you about it, that made me realize that I was still playing in that space of, you know, not owning it and, you know, thinking that we don't deserve it because we just listen to people and we help people and there shouldn't be awards for that. But what you guys made me realize, it's the hard work that has gone into that and the 10 years of, you know, turnaround and transformation that is the reason that we've won it. You know, not just for what we do every day, but, you know, for, as you guys said, honoring myself to stand up and choose that life and choose, you know, the right decisions.
Yeah. It was that little girl inside of you, Amelia, that just said, enough's enough.
Yeah.
That's who they were honoring that day. Because you gave that opportunity to how many thousands of people have you helped now, Amelia?
It's been up to about 1,200 in 4 years.
Get into jobs that they would never have been able to get into.
Yep.
So tell us about the bakery. I'm a big bakery fan. I'm very sweet.
You said patisserie before, patisserie. And his eyes lit up. Like, Amelia,
sweets. Tell me about what's the magic that happens there, buddy?
I have no idea how to bake, so let's just start with that.
Well, we're not coming to yours for dinner tonight, are we?
The sign fell on my foot one day and I rang up my parents and said, we're buying a bakery. And they said, whatever you decide to do, go crazy. So we have a bakery and the course is nothing really to do with baking or food. It's getting to know those people. However, everybody loves making cakes and cupcakes and pies and twists and all the delicious food that comes out of here, like donut day is one of the best days of the week. The point is that whilst they're making these foods, they're, you know, they're opening up about themselves. When you're busy with your hands, your mind seems to be a little less, you know, on edge. So my guys and all my trainers and my mentors who are amazing, they're watching these guys constantly and seeing what their actual strengths are and, you know, how they go working in a team and watching their disabilities or their perceived weaknesses fall away when they're, you know, confident and competent in doing something. And then, you know, at the end of their time is when we sit down and go, did you know that you're actually a leader? And did you know that you're all of these qualities? that they've never actually realized that they were, right, all through delicious baked goods.
Wow. Delicious baked goods. I love that.
That's
I love that.
That's cool.
We say it's changing lives whilst making pies.
I like that. we probably need to finish up because we've been chatting for a while, but can you tell me, just to sort of round things off, three things that you're most grateful for in everything that's happened?
Oh, you're going to make me cry.
We've been crying.
We've been crying over
here. I've got a box of tissues in front of me.
The biggest thing I'm grateful for is, you know, is when you decide to show up for yourself, that the people who love you and support you let you go and do that. And you guys did that the first time I met you. I remember telling Mitch and crying in front of that class, telling everyone I was a victim, and he just moved on and blanked me like it didn't happen. And I was like, okay, I get this now. And, you know, you guys were, when you guys told me that it was okay to have been through that and it doesn't define me, and then going out and being that in the world and watching my family just absolutely support me 100%, you know, that's what we do every day. We don't judge people from that. We let them have the space so they can move on. So that's the biggest blessing, to know that unconditional love is there, you know, and it's true. And when someone's willing to stand up and show up for themselves, the universe stands up and provides for them.
Wow. That's cool. I love that.
I think that's a beautiful way to finish up
and end.
Thanks so much, Amelia, for your time, for your just for being you.
Yes. Hey,
for your singing. Yes. Definitely a highlight.
And also, listen, best of luck with is it the Nationals? Is that what's happening next?
Yeah, National Young Entrepreneur of the Year Award. So I will definitely let you know.
Best actually, I'm going to ask one more question to finish up. I'm going to just change it up a bit. If you could give a piece of advice to anyone listening who's gone through something big, what would you say to them, Amelia?
Trust yourself. We know the right answer. We know what we need to do in that space. So trust yourself to go and do the right things, and make sure that you're very open and aware of people around you who are there to help. And go for it. You know, when I met you guys, there is no way that I could have practically gone and done the help, but I honored myself by signing up and saying this is something that I need, and it all works out in the end. So you've got to realize we cannot change that, but you can make a difference to your future in your life, and be open and aware. And if someone's willing to put their hand out and help you, then you grab that with all you've got, and you trust the process and walk through life with that.
Oh, I love that. That's amazing.
Amelia, thank you so much.
Thank you, buddy. We deeply appreciate it.
Thanks for being our first, Amelia.
And this will go down as our legendary first one.
We love and appreciate you.
God bless, pal.
See you.
Take care, buddy. Ciao.
Bye.